listening to the North Peace MB Church Roundtable Podcast. For more information, visit npmbchurch.com.
You are listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, episode 21. Thanks for listening. Either maybe you're driving or you're just listening to the audio on iTunes or Spotify, or maybe you're watching us on YouTube. I do want to say I laughed last week's episode. Here's a shout out to Jeremiah. His comment was, I love that you guys have a rectangle table. It's because it's so meta. Like, we're trying to send a message, right?
That's right.
We don't conform to the round table.
And for the subscriber who understands that and actually can relay that back to us as why we do that, there could be a prize.
You get a prize.
There could be a prize.
Oh, man. But if you are new or listening for the first time, thank you for listening. Like I said, we're on episode 21, so you should go back and listen to the first 20 episodes.
And have either of you?
I've listened to, not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah, I haven't listened to all of them.
I think we're slowly getting better.
I think so. Maybe start around 15.
Yeah. Don't go back to episode 2. Right. The one where Cam loses and just swears at all of us. Don't do that. Just kidding. So if you've, flips the rectangle table. Two episodes ago, we've kind of started a, I don't know if this is kind of a multi-part, couple episodes, but talking about creation, and episode 19 was about how God created everything. Was it a literal 6 days? Is it a young earth, old earth? Can you be a Christian and believe in evolution? And then last week we talked about specifically God creating humanity in his image. What does it mean that human beings are the image of God? So I would encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes. So today we want to talk about the fall. So basically it's like,
not the season.
Yeah. Pumpkin spice. It's sweater weather. Yeah, welcome to the fashion lifestyle blog. Oh my goodness. But you know what? That's true. If there's any like non-Christians, they'd be like, "What are you talking about, fall?" Right? We just love the fall.
Ugg boots and infinity scarves. Yeah.
So if you maybe aren't familiar with the Bible's narrative and you heard the last 2 weeks, you'd be like, man, everything sounds amazing. And so now we want to talk about when everything went sideways and why we see brokenness and evil and sin in the world. So we want to talk about Genesis 3, the fall. So far, everything, you read Genesis 1-2, God said it was very good. Adam and Eve are in this beautiful garden. They're working. It ends and Adam sings poetry. Oh, this beautiful woman's my wife. Now this is unbelievable. It sounds like paradise. So then what exactly happened?
And discussing this with Andrew, as always, is...
Oh, yeah. I forgot to introduce us.
Good day,
I was gonna,
everyone. Good afternoon. It's myself, Cameron, as always. And to my right is... Corlin.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Andrew, and these two guys don't matter. Yeah, sorry, that's my bad. Yes, Andrew, Corlin, and Cameron are here if you don't know us. Oh, man. That's okay. I was going to wait till the very end to do that.
Right?
Just add to the, like...
Oh, yeah, and they were here, too.
Yeah, and they were here, too. Anyways, so there you go. Now you know who we are. And so Genesis 3, what happened?
First off, I'd like to point out that that's only 3 chapters into the Bible and humans messed it up.
Yeah, page 2.
Like, we think we're great, but we only made it, like, what, 1 chapter, 2 chapters, and we screwed up.
Yeah. So what happened? How did we screw up, Corland?
We sinned. End of podcast. No, I'm kidding. the account tells us in the Bible, Genesis 3, that the serpent was a really crafty animal. Essentially, he came to Eve and Adam in the garden and twisted what God had said to them, the promises and the truths that God had said to them, and twisted them in a way that made Adam and Eve question whether or not God had been telling the truth. And so they chose to take their own path and try and decide what was best for them and take that into their own hands. And so they ate of the fruit that the serpent tempted them to, maybe more than if it had just been sitting there, tempted them to eat. Mm-hmm. And then God obviously knew about it, and sin entered the world, and here we are now, however many years later.
Which really started in verse 2 when, you know, right after the creation of man, the responsibility, the you know, I could just only picture God and Adam kind of having orientation. You know, like I envision that in my mind.
All right, welcome to the garden. Here's your name tag.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you're going to work, you're going to keep it. And by the way, that tree, you shall not eat of that, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for you will surely die.
Yeah.
And we've talked before, you know, offline about, you know, the Bible school kind of narrative that, or the Sunday school narrative that we have in our minds of, okay, it seems to happen just as we read it, you know. Boom, Adam's created. God breathes life into him. You walk around. That's the tree.
Like half an hour into the first day.
Half
an
hour into day 9 or whatever, like, you know, a couple days of debriefing.
Yeah.
And then sin enters the world. So we don't know what that looked like. We can only imagine.
Because we're not given a timeline.
No. Yeah. And it's not, I don't even think, you know, it's meant to be that. But man is given rule, dominion over everything. And we see responsibility and limitations to some degree, saying, and we have that in every aspect of our life, and theirs seems so little, like, do not eat of that tree or you will surely die. You will know good and evil. And then it's right in verse or chapter 3 where we see the deception, and we've said it before, that is the original lie that began in the heavens and has continued to this day. This idea of, you know, did God really say that? Mm-hmm. Is God really there? Mm-hmm. Are you sure that's what he said? The story hasn't changed. And so we see Adam and Eve there fall into that. And there's so many questions and interesting things to consider around there when you consider talking animals, when you consider, you know, possibly an upright snake, because we see later that, you know, the consequence of that is, you know, the snake will slide on its belly forever. So I can only, like, it's nice, it's kind of fun to let your mind wander. It's like, what did that look like? And even how, being in the presence of God, did man allow themselves to be lied to having this uninterrupted presence with God and this community with God?
Yeah.
Really interesting things to ponder and unpack.
Yeah, I think it's okay to admit that this is kind of a weird story, right? Because I know sometimes Christians, like, It's okay to admit that. There's weird stuff in the Bible. Page 3, or chapter 3, there's a talking snake. And you don't have to be like, yeah, that's normal. No, it's bizarre, right? And it's okay that you go like, man, that's really weird. So let's clarify, right? Not just a snake, right? We're all on board, right? This is clearly, you know, Satan, who is coming and tempting. Whether he kind of like entered into the body of his, we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the Bible calls Satan lots of places the serpent. So what did he look like? We don't really know, right? But you have, like Cam, you said, in chapter 2, you have this kind of one command that God gives human beings. You can eat of any tree in the garden, right? And just imagine that. You can eat of all of these other trees. There's maybe like hundreds of thousands of trees. Eat from any of them. You just can't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I think really what God was saying is, I'm the one who determines what's good and what's not good, and you don't. And you need to just trust me that my judgment is better than yours, right? I know good and evil. You do what I say. You obey and just trust that that's going to be good. And then Satan comes, and I love that. So that's what God says. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Satan comes to the woman, it says, and his temptation is, did God actually say you can't eat of any tree in the garden? Isn't that so good? Like,
right.
No, it's close, right? Like, we're allowed to eat. That's actually almost the opposite of what God said. We're allowed to eat of any of the trees. But then, so the woman answers him. We can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that's in the midst of the garden. Neither shall you touch it, lest you die, which also is not what God said. So isn't that fascinating? You already see the, like, seeds of kind of doubt being planted. And the woman almost, like, Eve almost exaggerates.
Sure.
Yeah, we can't eat of that one tree. We're not even allowed to touch it. And it's right. Like, well, that's not really what God said. And then God, Satan says, well, you won't die, right? He's questioning God. No. God lied to you. You won't die. You'll be like God, which is really fascinating because they were already like God.
Yeah, being made in the image of God already
gave
them that quality.
So Satan's offering them something that they already are, you know. And it's fascinating. What was Satan's big, like, why did Satan fall from heaven?
Well, same idea. You can be like God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is he really good? Is he really truthful? Yeah. Is he holding out on me? Is he not giving us, you know, the real deal? And that's the message that would have been spread. So this is a practiced art because a number of episodes ago, we talked about the fall, even angels and demons.
Mm-hmm.
And Satan not being omnipresent and all-knowing, it would have been an act. It would have been much like this, I think, of that deception, just spreading those lies and spreading that distrust.
Yeah, I read one. Yeah. I read one scholar that, like, Satan, his big thing was he wanted to be God, right? Sure. If you read Isaiah 14, I think it is. And then one writer I read said, no wonder Satan hates humans because they're made in God's image. They're like God. And so he comes and he wanted to be like God and he was cast out. And now he comes to human beings and they're made in the image of God. No wonder he hates.
And above angels.
Yeah. No wonder he hates them.
Right.
And so then he tempts them with the exact same thing that he wanted. And we're told that the humans fall for it. Right. And I think this is good to clarify. Adam and Eve were both there. Some people have, like, thanks a lot, Eve, right?
Right.
No wonder women can't choose where to eat, because the last time they chose, they,
right? They condemned humanity.
Yeah.
But it's not as if, Eve ate and she was by herself, and then, you know, later on she told Adam about it, and then Adam ate as well. It says that she took, this is verse 6, she took of its fruit and ate and gave some to her husband, who was with her, and he ate. So they're both there, right? And Adam is just kind of passively letting all this happen. And then their eyes are opened, and they realize they're naked, so you have shame enter into the picture. Because before that, there was no shame.
Right.
Adam and Eve were naked, and it wasn't like don't look at me. It was like, this seems normal. This is fine. There is no shame or guilt. And now there is, and so they go and they hide, and then God comes and looks for them, which is so good. And, like, such a fatherly thing to do, right? Like, it's not like God didn't know where they are.
Hey, wait,
where did they go? Like, no, but what does he do? He says, hey, where are you? Which is so good, right? I think of my own kids, and when they've done something wrong, and, like, you don't just, you know, you do the same thing.
Sure.
Hey, where are you guys? Like, what happened? And you know exactly what happened, right? Yeah. But God gets them to essentially confess what they had done. And I love it. Adam, you know, wouldn't it be great if it was like, and Adam said, I messed up, God. No, what does he say?
Yeah, exactly.
It's Eve's fault.
Yeah. And it's interesting, even when you think of that scenario, because where was God when where was he viewing that interaction from? Because he's present. You know what I mean? Like, he's watching this unfold. And he's seeing the interaction. He allows Satan to enter that scene and provide temptation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's in control of all. And so that's just an interesting scenario. And knowing what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think with a lot of the topics that we've covered with attributes of God or the creation account, I think that they're common in stuff like that that just breaks our boxes of understanding. So, like, how.
Yeah.
That it, to me, this account proves that we had free will, because if God was present and there and with us, he still allowed us the choice, or humanity the choice, to sin and rebel against him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he knew that they were going to. So he's all knowing. So, like, you have this crazy, not mess, but like this crazy collision of two extremes.
Yeah.
And so that there isn't. Like, it's so weird to try and hold those in tension, but we see it as a truth here. And I think that as a kid, Sunday school belief is like, oh, okay. So God gave us free will. Cool. We chose. Okay, cool. But he also knew it. Okay. And I just left it at that. I never really actually thought about how crazy that is.
Or then, like, you were getting onto the fatherly response after that. Like, we read.
Yeah.
Okay. We're naked. We're hiding. Who told you?
Yeah.
Where you were naked. Yeah. That's also a very so fatherly response.
Yeah.
And then, okay, you're naked. You feel shame. You're hiding. I don't want you to hide. Yeah. We're going to create clothing for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to make a way for you to come out of that shame and out of that hiding.
Yeah. So it's interesting that, yeah, Adam blames Eve. So here's, and then Eve blames the serpent.
So, she gave me the fruit. I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot, God, for this wife that you gave me.
And then God's like, what did you do? And she's like, the serpent.
Yeah, it's not me. Yeah. Right. So, and don't we do that? I mean, this has continued on forever. Anytime we're caught in sin, I would say oftentimes that's the response. It's like, it's not my fault. Right. Right? So I even think, even personally, my own story, and many of you listening will know because I've shared my story, but even when I was wrestling with the porn addiction, oftentimes when I would mess up, the first thought would be like, if my wife was more, you know, available, then I wouldn't do this. This is kind of her fault, right? So we do that. Human beings, we do that for everything. Like, well, I had to lie because my neighbor doesn't know what he's doing, and I had to, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. That's the human response from then on. So it's just interesting to see that the very first sin, it's the pointing fingers, and it's not my fault. Like, I didn't, it's Eve's fault. And then Eve goes, not my fault. It's the serpent's
There's
fault.
There's no ownership of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Which has just continued forever. And then God, for the rest of chapter 3, and we won't read all of it, but then God then pronounces these curses, which are just natural outcomes of what sin has caused, right? He says to the serpent, you're going to crawl on your belly. Verse 15 is this promise of Jesus. One day someone's coming who's going to crush your head. To the woman, he says, I'm going to multiply your pain in childbearing, which is interesting. And we'll get to this in a minute, but he doesn't say, he says multiply pain.
I'm not going to create pain
yeah,
for
so
you.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There was pain. there has to be. So we'll get to that in a bit. But he says, I'm going to multiply your pain. So it's going to be more painful now for you to have babies. And then the marital relationship is going to have issues. The end of verse 16, your desire is going to be against your husband. He's going to lord over you. And then he says to Adam, like, your life is going to be really hard now, essentially. If I would summarize what he says, like, by pain, you're going to work, the sweat of your brow, and then you're going to return to dust and die, basically.
Curses the ground because of you.
Yeah, so the whole, yeah. So think about that, all of creation. He says, because of you guys, like, the ground is actually cursed now. Like, the actual, it's going to be a lot harder to farm and to do work, and it's going to be frustrating. And then God kicks him out of the garden, essentially. He says in verse 22, behold, the man has become like one of us in knowing good and evil. Now, lest he reach out his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Then he kicks him out. Which, again, we see that as like, oh, God, it's so judgmental. Why would you do that? He actually does it because he loves us. Because mm-hmm. he says, okay, they know good and evil now. Now they're going to eat from the tree of life. And they're going to live forever in this state of awfulness.
Right.
So he says, I'm going to send or kick you out, put an angel in front.
And a sword.
And a sword, and now you can't go back.
It's such a wild thing to, like, even try and imagine what that would have looked like. Like, yeah. I very visual person. So whenever I read something like this, my brain is always trying to create an image to what this would have actually looked like.
To rationalize it sometimes.
Yeah. And like you were saying earlier, it's a... To describe it in one word, not to diss anything that the Bible says, but it sounds whack. Like, God placed an angel there and a flaming sword. Like, was the angel holding the sword? Was the sword just kind of floating there? Like, it's interesting to try and wrap your head around it. But
so do you think all of this is literal? Like, was there a actual Adam and Eve? Was there an actual serpent? Was there an actual tree, fruit, angel? Or is this metaphor? What do you guys think?
I think that it is literal. And my reasoning behind it, and which I'm willing to be challenged upon, is Genesis sits in the historical text of the Bible. Like, the text that set up, essentially, the narrative of the Bible, and they're meant to be counted as history. So I would not see the point in the authors writing them in some metaphorical crazy way. However, I am interested to know what you guys think on that as well.
they're, I would say both in some ways, just because, like, was the guy's name Adam? So, I mean, well, does it really matter what his name was? Not really, but it's essentially representing humankind. Like, so, you know, and when the text was written, when the Holy Spirit was revealing this truth, I mean, there was it an apple? Was it a fruit? Like, what? It doesn't matter. Like, there's elements of the story that...
I bet it was a papaya. Ugh.
Or mango.
Pomegranate. They got into the middle.
I think you make a good point, though, Cameron. Is forever. Even though there are very, very literal aspects to this passage, like that there was a man and a woman there, there was a serpent, there was...
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's very literal things happening and there... There's also a lot of symbolism and deeper meaning and stuff sure. like that to each one of those aspects of this story.
Because before it was made into text, it was oral tradition passed down generation to generation to generation. And, you know, when we talk about a historical book of the Bible, that's generally speaking like more of... account, you know, like king after king after king, because that's a historical context, where this is, it's history and creation narrative. But, you know, I've often, when I thought about like biblical interpretation and some of the original texts, like you're Holy Spirit inspired, absolutely, God breathed, absolutely, but again, not God grabbing the writer's hand and actually a vision on the wall necessarily of the exact fruit, the exact type of animal.
Yeah, totally.
And the Bible would come with pictures if that was the case.
That's not even a joke. Like, it would if that was the case. So one thing we do is, like, we've talked about in other episodes, is we, like, almost put the biblical authors as saintly and, like, wow, like, they were a form of God writing this direct vision. Where what's more beautiful is that they were inspired, and the story that had carried through orally through their families was finally put into text, which... And so, yeah, that's why you've said it before. It's tough, Andrew, when, you know, you get into a group of people and they're having this big, long debate about something irrelevant. I think you joked how many angels can fit in a car or what type of fruit was it or where is the garden today? You know, those type of conversations. Well, they're interesting for a few minutes, but if you get stuck on that for a month, you're really wasting your time.
Yeah. Agreed. So the next question then is, so Adam and Eve... sinned and brought in death and brokenness and sin and evil. So now we, you know, I guess the question I'm asking is, you know, do we inherit guilt from Adam? You know, 6,000-7,000 years removed, we would say, like, yeah, we're all born sinners. So why? Like, why? Or, like, is that fair to say, like, okay, Adam and Eve messed up and now 6,000 years later I'm born a sinner? What? So how, like, is that true? Do we inherit guilt from Adam and Eve? Is it fair? Is it not fair?
I think this is a great question. Again, because I think especially in North America, the way these stories have been taught, especially if you were taught them at a young age, like most, like we were probably, is this is what happened and believe it. Like, there wasn't much more substance to it, right? There wasn't anything to really allow you to understand why it happened. So I think first off, I would say that as a kid, we inherit guilt from Adam. That would be my Sunday school answer, is just yes. As to why, I think that I would point to what Paul wrote in Romans. I think it's Romans 5, where he talks about how... just as sin entered the world through one man, so will, and this is my own paraphrase of it.
Do you want me just to read it?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. If you have,
therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned. Blame that. We're all born sinful. And yet I think there's, like you said, there's a stage of innocence almost with kids that they're not... it's not like they come out the most depraved, you know, doing the worst sin that you can imagine when they're born. There's this kind of time of innocence, and but very early on, it's like I've shared the story, like, you know, when Lucy was like one right? And she responds to something I said by like hitting me as hard as she could. I'm like, well, I didn't teach her how to do that. So like early on, kids rear their sinful nature from a very young age.
Yeah, because I think it's clear to it's important we make it clear that that's a sinful nature showing its head, not what's being taught necessarily. Because
yeah,
I think society nowadays, especially in North America, would teach, you know, your kids will express only what you teach them. Like they will mirror whatever you do, which is true to an extent.
Sure.
But there are elements of this where it is their sinful nature showing up and showing through them, right? It's mm-hmm. not just what you taught them. Because like you said, you probably didn't teach.
I mean, I only punched the drywall like 4 or 5 times. So, but it's true. It's like, wow, from early on, okay, I can tell that you have a sinful nature. Like, I didn't teach you how to hit or teach you how to lie or grab toys from your brother or sister. Like, you just do that inherently. Okay, well, that's super interesting. So, and I even heard one scholar say, like, because sometimes people say, well, that doesn't seem fair. Why, because of Adam and Eve, am I born sinful? And one guy that I read that I found his answer was so interesting. He said, if you think that it's not fair that Adam and Eve kind of acted on your behalf and you're guilty because of that, then it's also not fair that Jesus acts on your behalf and you're pardoned and redeemed. Because what you think about, Jesus dies on the cross and then he's raised from the dead, and we would say that that counts for me.
For all future sin.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so you can't say that, like, I'll take that, but Adam and Eve sinning counts for me? No. I don't like that.
Need that.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. So it makes sense then if we accept Jesus's death and resurrection on our behalf, well, then of course, you know, as much as I don't like it, I have a sinful nature because Adam and Eve chose to sin and rebel. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can rest in that and not fully understand, right? Like, and there's a part of Jesus' death and resurrection. Okay, how does that make me 2,000 years later free from the guilt of sin? I don't know what kind of transaction happened on the cross, but that's part of faith, right? Where we go, okay, yeah. I'll believe that that it's true.
I think that that's huge, is that there are faith elements to this. Like, we might not have all the answers, like you were saying, but I think that it does point out, when you think about it and consider the things that the Bible teaches about how sin entered the world through one man and how Jesus paid for all sins, if you choose to believe, I think the thing that comes to mind for me is that God had a plan. Like, there wasn't this scrambling to try and figure something out. It was, okay, well, this is...
Yeah, that's a good point.
This
He's
is
not
how
like,
it is.
Oh, no!
And we
they
see that...
They ate the fruit!
We see that even in the fall account in Genesis, right? Like, when they make the clothing out of fig leaves, it wasn't good enough. Their own efforts to cover their sin and shame weren't good enough. God had to provide flesh.
That's a really good point.
And it wasn't like we see nothing in the Bible and no... We're not given a timeline, but I would assume that there wasn't a lot of time after God confronted them about their sin where God makes a solution. It's they go hand in hand, right? As soon as there's an issue, it's here's the resolution, here's what we'll do to remedy this.
It says don't go hide, come, let's
but that's such a good point, because I think we have that view, maybe some people do, like sin happens and it's almost like the Trinity has a little powwow. Okay, guys, they ate from the fruit, or they ate from the tree.
Right.
Jesus, any ideas? And Jesus is like, I could go, you know, like he, right? In Ephesians, it says, before the foundation of the earth, before God made anything, he knew the plan of redemption. So that's a really good thing to consider. Like, God is totally sovereign. This didn't catch him by surprise. He there's that balance, right? We have free will to decide, but he knew what was going to happen. Yeah. And he had a plan all along.
And so some would say, what's the point of that then? And we talked about that a few episodes ago about, okay, if he knew like that people would fall and they would need a savior, like it seems like a setup in some regards. I've heard that argument before. And I don't remember the response, but I remember the conversation more so around, which tied into something we talked about in previous episodes, where creation, like I think it was around when we were speaking about angels and how that they just are created to worship God, but then some fell because there's still that choice. Like God, knowing the end from the beginning, knew that that would happen, knew, like you said, there's a plan. And I thought about parenting, actually, where, okay, It's 2020. The world is in all sorts of shambles, but people are still having children. Mm-hmm. And when we had children, my wife and I spoke, like, you know, my own personal journey is I went through a journey of addiction to drugs for a number of years. And that is an awful thing to think about, but my children can face all sorts of things. They could develop a disease. It doesn't prevent me from having them.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to be in that relationship. I still want to love them. I still want to watch them grow old, despite the risks. And yeah. I don't even know them. And he knew them, but still wanted that togetherness.
Yeah.
Despite knowing that we would fall away. And so I know that's kind of a cheesy, dumbed down almost way to view that, but God desires a relationship, desires us to be close to him.
Yeah.
Knowing that we're going to mess up, but still created us and still wanted that.
And if we take that fatherly desire to raise children, to watch them grow old and stuff, but then add on to it that he created us to glorify him.
Yeah.
Like we are his creation designed with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So of course he'd have a plan for us. It's not fatherly love, right? Like that we can see here in front of us, even in the beautiful moments of it, is broken compared to what God shows for us and has shown for us throughout the ages.
And even the creation of man, like we read about being made in his image and we talked about the other week, it's almost like his glory is displayed through that creation. Yeah. And the glory actually that creation could fall but still be redeemed. And watch that glory come forward with the amount of them who will actually overcome that sinful nature.
Yeah.
Who will come running back to the cross through a conviction and actually begin worshiping God again. That actually could be more glorious than a creation designed with no purpose, no fault, no failure, no nothing. It would just be an example, like we would be sun rays to God without a real purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's more glorious that this happened, we walked through it, but today there's countless millions of folks still clinging to and glorifying God through that. I think that brings more glory to his creation.
Did you silence your phone?
I did, yes.
So did I. You heard my phone ring. We're all like, oh, whoops, my bad. So here's an interesting question. We'll move on to the next question. Was creation perfect before the fall? Because here's why I asked that question. I think sometimes we have this view that like it was a perfect paradise, no pain, no hardship, no bruises, nor sore muscles, and then sin ruined everything, and we had this perfection that we lost. Is that, do you think that that's true? Was creation perfect before the fall?
So before we get into this, I think you'll probably hear us say quite often that like the Sunday school answer is this. For those of you listening, if you don't know what we mean by that, I think I'll try and explain it simply. Essentially what we're trying to get at is what we would have understood when we were a child, like our simplistic understanding of it with very little depth. It would have just been kind of, you know, to the T what we were told understanding of it.
Sure.
However, that being said, I think my Sunday school answer to that would be, no, it was perfect. They wouldn't have had pain.
I don't even think just my Sunday school answer. I think my answer till like 6 months ago would have been like, yeah, it was perfect. There was no pain. There was no sore muscles. There was no, Adam never cut his finger, never got a sliver, never got tired. And then now, because thanks a lot, sin.
We're
now
not told he gets slivers, Andrew.
Yeah. but here's why I wrestle. I think we have a very North American view of the word perfect. Right. And again, I've been more and more challenged to go, okay, what would the original, right? The original, they're Middle Eastern Israelites who would have either heard the stories and then read them. Like these were Jewish people who lived in the Middle East. And the Hebrew word for perfect, that is the only word for perfect that's used throughout the Bible in Hebrew. It means literally like complete or finished, like done. It's done. It's perfect. It's complete, which that's not Genesis. It's not done. It's not finished. It's just starting, right?
Yeah.
And then I was really challenged. Nowhere in the first two chapters of Genesis does God ever say, yeah, it's perfect. He says it's good.
It's very good.
It's very good. Because I think we have the idea of perfection as like you know, I just lay around. Like, what did Adam and Eve do? Like, did they just kind of lay around and, oh, yeah, I just throw some seeds out and bring, they miraculously yield this harvest. Well, we're not,
No, it says they put them in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it.
Yeah.
In chapter in verse 15 of the chapter 2, which gives this picture of you have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have naming responsibilities. Like,
totally.
There's work to do. And even when you think about it a little further, we're given a model of creation that includes a day of rest.
Yeah, if it was perfect, why do we have to rest?
And the creator of the universe himself gave this model. He did not need rest.
Yeah, yeah.
He did not need to pause, but he knew we would.
Where do you think this belief that creation was perfect stems from? Because like you said, it doesn't say in Genesis, in the creation account, that God made it perfect. He's made it and it was very good. But where do you think it actually stems from then?
Man, that's a good question. Because I think even sometimes the entire we have this narrative that I don't think is actually biblical. Because here's why. I think we have this idea that creation was perfect. It was paradise. Sin wrecked the earth. One day Jesus is going to rapture all the Christians out, right? And then we're going to live in heaven. And then the earth will be destroyed because it's so messed up from sin. Lots of people have that. That's their narrative of the Bible, right?
Settle down, Kirk Cameron.
Well, yeah, right? Left behind.
Sure.
That's not the narrative of the Bible. The whole narrative of the Bible is that, I believe, in Genesis 1 and 2, heaven and earth were totally overlapped because God was with humanity. Mm-hmm. Now sin enters, and now you have this kind of disconnect between heaven and earth. The whole point of the entire Bible is not that we die and go to heaven. The whole point of the entire Bible is that Jesus redeems us and one day heaven comes back to earth. And there's this, again, this perfect overlap. There's a new heaven. There's a new earth. Read the last, like, Genesis or Revelation.
The new Genesis.
21, right? And what is it? Oh, here comes the new Jerusalem, heaven out and coming down to earth. And there's this perfect overlap again.
We read about the earth groaning for the coming of the Lord. Like,
it's and God actually because we have this idea of a new heaven. Well, he must just destroy the old one. That's actually not the case.
No.
He redeems it and restores it. And the imagery is through fire and all that kind of stuff. So that's why we think, well, he's just blowing it up. Well, no, it will be this earth.
It.
Like, think about that. Eternity will be on this earth, this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just perfected, and that's when it will be finally perfect. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And when I think of the Garden of Eden, Satan and demons were present.
Yeah,
already.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah,
because Satan's there, which means and it implies everything we read about the fall of the heavenly fall pre-existed before this creation, which would then only leave like God knew Satan was present to some extent, and obviously had this plan. So was creation perfect? No, it wasn't. It was very good.
Yeah,
it was
totally
designed good,
and it had potential. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the fallen angels and Satan were still present, also.
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons that we call it perfect is because we look at the world today and we're like, oh, I just want to go back to.
We're so broken now.
Yeah. We just like, I just want to escape, right? I just want to leave. And we have this idea that I just want to go to heaven. Well, but that's not the end goal of Christianity. The end goal is not that we escape to heaven. Even like, and this, maybe this is a whole other topic, because nowhere in the Bible actually does the phrase go to heaven exist. Nowhere. There's lots of talk about, like, Paul says, I want to go be with Jesus.
True.
Jesus says to the thief on the cross, you'll be with me in paradise. But there's no like narrative or idea of, like, I heard one guy say, if you would go to any Israelite and say, oh, are you hoping to go to heaven when you die? They would just stare at you being like, what?
Right.
What are you talking about? When I die, I go in the grave. Like, but we're with God, whatever that looks like.
You know what? It's really frustrating now. On social media, there's some folks that I follow, and there are just some things that pop up that is really pushing to, like, the end is near.
Yeah.
We need to, you know, convert, turn to Jesus, because we're going to die and we need to be with him.
Yeah.
And it is such a lazy sellout of the gospel.
Yeah.
Because if you're diluting the glory that could be today, that
sure.
today you could be with Jesus
yeah.
and have eternal hope, and that salvation story is for today also.
Yeah.
And so if always focus to fire insurance so that you
yeah.
don't go to hell when you die, lazy, diluted gospel
yeah.
that was never
And I mean, we should
for
long for Jesus to come back, but we're never told to just kind of sit around and wait.
I think it's selling it short if we
yeah.
tell people to, hey, become a Christian so that you're saved then, because becoming a Christian and believing in Jesus saves you now.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And there's
start,
hope today.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That changes everything internally, nothing externally in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's not the point. We don't see that through Scripture.
Yeah.
Again,
I have a random question like, was creation perfect? And maybe we don't have to cover it, but, like, do you think Adam and Eve, like, aside from God telling them that the ground would be cursed and stuff and that the world was now broken because of their choice, do you think that they knew and, like, could feel physical changes because of sin right away? Like, we're
yes.
not told anything, but, like, do you think it was, like, walking into a really smelly room then when they left Eden? And it was like, oh, man.
Was that you, Eve?
This place sucks. Like,
yeah,
do you think
I totally
knew
think
right
so.
Away, or do you think it was kind of one of those things where as time went on, they'd notice, like, more things that would point to, oh, man. Like,
probably both.
Right.
I'd say both.
It's both, because we do see throughout world history and evolution of just darkness. Like, just, it seems like generation after generation, you know, disease is evolving. Like, you
mm-hmm.
have this original state. So I don't think they walked out, honestly, to, like, every known disease, to,
yeah, right.
to straight up war, famine, right out of the
COVID-19.
Gate.
COVID-19.
But you think early on, what happened?
Absolutely.
One of their sons murdered the other one.
Well,
so they go,
was present.
You go, what
yeah.
just
yeah.
happened? That was
sure.
the first murder they would have, I guess they weren't there seeing it, but they would have. What?
Yeah.
You
and we
killed
don't know
your...
Yeah.
Because yeah.
then you'd have to wrestle with, okay, they're walking out of Eden carrying their kids too, right?
Yeah, which they're not technically, because it says after they get kicked out, they have Cain.
Right. So then there's what?
So think about 15, that, right?
20 years later?
Yeah, and then this pain is... Eve would have experienced that, like multiplied pain
right.
through childbirth. Mm-hmm. And then they have their sons who then one kills the other, and it's kind of like... I think so. It would have been a gradual realization, like, wow, this messed up everything.
Mm-hmm.
But like to go back, I think too, like, you know, Adam and Eve, when they worked the garden, yeah, probably they had sore muscles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. They weren't super human heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I'm sure at the end of the day, Adam was like, oh man, moving that one tree to the, like, I'm sure it was
yeah.
hard work.
Yeah.
I think the difference is when you read chapter 3, now work is frustrating, and there's toil would be a word, right? When you're and things go wrong. I think before it was hard work, but it was satisfying. Like, man, this is amazing. I'm glad that I get to do this. But now I think because of the fall, it's just frustrating. And everyone listening who has a job knows what we're talking about. There's days when they're like, man, that was amazing. I love my job. I am sore, but I feel great because that's what God created you to do. And then there's days when it's like, ugh, I want to pull my hair out. This is so frustrating and nothing is going right.
Yeah.
I think that's an effect of the fall.
Yeah.
And God gave that model of rest because we're naturally designed, many of us, to like just continue working.
Yeah, totally.
To not stop, to not take time for family, for God himself.
So then think of the new heavens and the new earth. I think it's going to be exactly like the garden. We're going to have jobs. We're going to work. We're going to farm. We're going to grow.
Isaiah prophesied that
yeah.
we would work, but then reap the benefits of our vineyard. We would actually get
yeah.
to see the growth. We would get to taste
totally.
The meat of the tree, those trees again, because we see this renewed picture. And it pushes against the idea that we're all going to be just sitting in heaven.
Yeah, it's an eternity-long church service.
Right, yeah. right. And I can only imagine that, could you, you know, there's going to be responsibilities in the new heaven. There's going to be roles.
Totally.
And if yours is the throne room of God, I can only imagine that would be beyond anything we could think of. And right now it seems like, wow, eternal church service. I hope I'm the one doing interpretive painting in the corner, you know? Because we have those broken, sinful thoughts of what that could look like. But
you know what, Cam? I'm gonna switch you to something else. Painting's not really your thing.
Right? Do I get the flags, God?
I think another important aspect, though, with do you, like the question of do you think they notice right away is we talked a lot about the physical, like would they have, you know, Adam instantly has back issues now for the rest of his life. Yeah. Like we talked about stuff like that, but I think it's important to recognize too that there was a spiritual disconnect now too.
Totally.
Like Andrew, you had talked earlier about how when the Garden of Eden was made, it would have been more likely than not heaven and earth combined, mixed together.
Yep.
Sin would have separated that to God's space, our space. Jesus is what bridges that gap. And I think because God was with Adam and Eve in the garden, I think they would have felt that too, spiritually.
Oh, yeah. Like
would have known that something was not right in that way.
Yeah, because what God says in verse 17 of chapter 2 says, in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. Well, they didn't die physically that very day, but I think there was a spiritual death that happened, right?
Yeah.
A relational death that took place. So, yeah, I think there would
God
be...
God wouldn't have completely abandoned them.
No.
There's just this difference. Like,
yeah.
It's just that you're not living in community anymore.
Yeah.
Then we see these systems designed because, you know, like the Ark of the Covenant, for example, later, like when when the Ten Commandments are given.
And purity laws and things like that, because human beings can't just stroll into God's presence now, right? Because they're unclean. And
there's evil can't
be
in
exactly.
the place of complete whole righteousness and live.
Yeah.
And that's easier to understand now.
Yeah. So we're already like 45 minutes. So
nice.
to wrap it up, I think the application part of it is really interesting, because I think we've touched on it a bunch. I don't want to repeat ourselves, right? But I think sometimes when we view the fall, we just go like, the whole world sucks. Can't wait till Jesus blows it up. And it's like, we'd never say that, but that's how a lot of Christians have. Jesus come back and there's nothing good about this world. That's not true, right? And human beings now, part of our kingdom work, if you want to call it that, right, is not just sell fire insurance, right? Mm-hmm. Tell people about Jesus so when he blows it up, you're safe. I think now it's we should care about beauty and hard work, like what Genesis 2 talks about. Mm-hmm. And we should care about art and
justice
and recycle, like all of these things, right? Like. Mm-hmm. So your life as a Christian has incredible meaning now, right? And to think through, like part of advancing the kingdom of God is, and I'm using redeem not in the same way of like Jesus redeems us, but we're meant to redeem culture. We're meant to redeem certain aspects of our lives, how I parent my kids, how I love my wife, how I take care of my yard. It sounds silly, but it's like, man, do I actually care about God's creation, and do I make it beautiful, and how we don't overconsume. I'm not going to hoard things so that my neighbor starves. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to share, and I'm going to, you know, that's the picture.
And not to do these things with the sole purpose of trying to, with quotation marks, if you're listening, be a better person,
no.
But because of what God has done for us.
Totally.
And what's the word I'm looking for? In response to that, these things because he's called us to.
And there are cultures that put a lot of concern and effort into the environment, into nature. And in the West, we would almost say, you're idolizing, you're making idols, you're not worshiping the one and true God. And that's what I'm looking at right now is intercultural studies. Some of these cultures are saying, no, God created this. He said it was good.
Mm-hmm.
This is his design. We have a responsibility to really
maintain
be mindful
it.
Of how we use it.
Yeah.
We're going to use it, but we're going to be good stewards of it.
Totally.
If we just don't care, then we are disobeying and sinning against God.
Mm-hmm.
This is his creation. When we look through that lens, we will consume differently. We will be more mindful of our impact. And, you know, both ends of the spectrum, and that could swing either way, but we do have a responsibility as Christians to not only share the gospel, but to show the gospel in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So it's not that, you know, the picture is not that, you know, I plant an orchard so that I can have more apples than I need. No, the picture of God's kingdom is I plant an orchard so now I can feed my entire community. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So I always joke with my brother-in-law. We should wrap this up, but it's just so good. I always joke with my brother. I'm like, yeah, man, communism sounds pretty good. And he's like, because he's an American. No! But I'm like, and I'm not saying communism is good, but there's an aspect where, we're supposed to share what we have, and we're supposed to take care of one another, and we're not supposed to hoard our riches. We're supposed to actually, like,
Sure.
Disperse it. And so the whole like capitalist make myself rich is actually anti-kingdom of God, dare I say it, right?
Well, yeah.
And we're, maybe that's a whole other episode. So sure. We should wrap this up. But sure. There. So I want to just say, like, as a follower of Jesus, yeah, you look at the world and you go, okay, the effects of the fall, we can see it, right? But there's also hope in Jesus, not just for I get to go to heaven, because that's actually not the narrative of the Bible. The hope in Jesus is I get to be with Jesus forever. One day heaven's going to come down to earth. And in the here and now, I get to be with Jesus every day. And his presence is with me. And now my work and my family life and everything about my life has an extra meaning and weight behind it, because we get to be involved in in what God's doing in the earth today. So anyways, I think we should wrap it up. There's a whole bunch of other questions that maybe we'll answer next week, you know, about generational curses and sin and soul ties and like all sorts of questions related to sin that we didn't have time. So maybe we'll answer those next week. And so hopefully that was helpful to you and just interesting and maybe things that you have never thought of. And so as always, please subscribe in iTunes or in Spotify or Google Podcasts, or if you want to watch, subscribe to the church's YouTube channel, because we'll post the videos there. And like we often say, if you ever have questions, if you're like, hey, can you go back and like clarify that, or what about this, feel free to ask. We would love to have some feedback from you. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.